team, right?
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Got an opinion?
Hello.
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, the best of Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Please don't text or call, as you will be charged.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Oh, then I'll mention the coachman's email, because they're the same. You could feed five people on a plate.
Yeah, huge big plate. And then we got apple tart and ice cream, hot apple tart and ice cream.
Right.
And then we got, I got tea, and then Brendan.
Steve's hungry just thinking about this. Coffee. Yeah.
But the staff were absolutely excellent. Now, we've been there before, just going out on a Sunday afternoon. We say, go up and we'll book a table on the, Saturday. Go up on the Sunday because they're always very busy. And I have to say, there are excellent staff up there.
Yeah.
Very courteous, very polite.
See, Steve.
They come over. Is everything all right?
In fairness, Margaret, that's what they're paying
to
do.
Will you stop being so pessimistic, running down your own?
Somebody's so negative, Steve.
Margaret. Well, I mean, true or false, that's what they're paid to do.
But how many don't do that, Steve? That's the problem.
When you were in Las Vegas,
all right, sir, you want anything else there? That's the same thing.
It was fake.
Yeah, but Margaret, I don't care if it's fake or not. Here's the thing, you know, if I go away to Florida, whatever, right, and you go into a shop, even for a packet of cigarettes, right, And they look at you. They'll make eye contact with you.
Have a nice day.
In Florida, it's like, you have a blessed day, sir. And I know it's fake, but it's lovely.
My local shop, where I go up, and if I run out of something, it's Centra here in Lusk, and the staff are excellent. How are you today, Margaret? You're feeling all right?
That's not the service I've got in local shops. When I go into them here in Dublin, for example, they're either chewing gum behind the counter. They don't even make eye contact and they fling the stuff on the counter at you.
I tell you one thing, if that was my employee, he or she would be sacked on the spot.
Yeah.
Chewing gum. No way. Wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
But no eye contact.
I remember I walked into, I won't tell you, a phone shop one day. I was looking for a charger and there was a geezer on the floor behind the counter looking through a box for something. I don't know what he was looking for. And I walked in anyway. And I was the only person there. And I said, hi, excuse me. And he was looking through the box. Somebody went, yeah. And he didn't even look at me, right? And I said, how you doing? Yeah, I'm looking for a phone charger. And he was rooting. He went, yeah, what's for? And he's still rooting through this box looking for something. And I said, would you like to look at me for a minute? And he went, what? I said, would you like to look at me for a minute? A bit of eye contact, a bit of service.
Yeah.
And he went, he told me to F off. So I just walked.
I just told you to F off as well. You want the charger.
So I walked out of the shop. I just walked out.
I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously going to the right places because, I mean, the Man of War, fantastic. Staff, excellent.
Have you noticed? This is what I have found. Margaret's still going. Margaret, sorry. Have you noticed that when you're getting served by a foreign national, you know, maybe a Polish or Ukrainian, whatever, they're actually much nicer than the Irish people?
I have to say that a mixture of staff in Centra and a mixture of staff up in the Man of War, and I have to say all staff were excellent. Regardless.
Yes, yeah. I live in Dundalk unfortunately, it's hard to understand them up here.
Yeah, hi. All right, hi.
It's more of a dirtle accent.
Dirtle. That's kind of more Northern Ireland, isn't it? Dirtle.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them where I am. Actually, in the pharmacy that I use all the time, But every one of them are Northern Irish. They're all dear Lairs. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, that's quite normal. But, you know, in the border towns, yeah, Monaghan, Dundalk and Cavan and all these places, you kind of have a lot of Northern people working. And vice versa, in Uri and places, you have people like from Dundalk working there. But stay there, cross-border working is common. Annette, hi.
Hello, Annette. How are you?
How you doing, Annette? How's the jam coming on?
Oh, it's a gem. I've given it up as a bad job.
Oh, no, okay. There's not enough bees around this year, anyway.
I'll never make jam of them.
Sorry?
I have frozen the gooseberries, but I'll never make jam of them.
Right, okay, you won't. I never liked the gooseberries, in fairness, Annette. Gooseberries are a bit sour.
Oh, they're too sour for you.
Yeah, unless you lashed in, you know, a few spoonfuls of sugar into it.
Do you like apricot jam, Lyle?
No, raspberry, strawberry or blackcurrant.
Strawberry or blackcurrant, okay.
Yeah, raspberry.
Like any jam.
Yeah, now raspberry can be a bit bland as well without the sugar. Anyway, Annette, sorry, if you ever got good service?
I'd say my best service, and always, is down in County Clare in Doolin in a place called McDermott.
Okay.
And no matter what time of the day you go in, you'll get the best of service. Right. Anytime.
Okay, McDermott's in Doolin. And what do they serve? What do you get?
You get everything you want. From music to drink to beautiful people.
Food.
From all walks of life. From all corners of the world.
Okay.
They're well known.
Okay.
But it's a lovely spot to go to in Doolin.
Okay.
And then you're not far from the Doolin Cave, which is the highest stalactite in Europe and the fourth highest in the world. Mm. Did you know that?
Well, I didn't know that, but Steve is now ChatGPTing it, I imagine, and Googling it to find out.
No, I'm always confused between a stalactite and a stalagmite.
Tight is up, white is down.
Always remember the stalactite is holding on tight to stay up.
Right.
Ah, okay. That'll stick with me now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll make it easier to remember what's the difference.
Yeah. The stalagmite obviously drips onto the stalactite, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. Anyway, yeah.
And when you go down there, you'll have to visit the Pooka.
Yeah, well, now, see, we're going to be talking to, by the way, the creator of the Pooka, Aidan Hart, in a few minutes' time.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's the most beautiful piece of work.
Well, not without its own controversy, by the way.
It had its own controversy, you know, in Ennis Diamond, and the entrance to Ennis Diamond. I don't know where it was going up in Ennis Diamond.
Well, it was originally meant to be in Ennis Diamond in County Clare, but that, in 2021, but that didn't happen.
No, yeah. Because there was objections to it.
Yeah.
But it's now in Cairn, County Clare, which is where the birthplace of Michael Cusick, the founder of the GAA, was.
Yeah. And, historically
it's
named...
It's set up there. And it says they're getting a load of tourists there, because I was talking to the lady who was serving there during the summer, and she said, it has brought so many people here.
It's huge, isn't it?
Absolutely huge.
Yeah, now, for people who don't know,
I know
what it looks like. For people who don't know, it's kind of like a man with a horse's head. Yeah.
A horse's head, yeah. Mm. But, when we were growing up at home, if you don't go to bed fast, the Pooka will get you. But we never knew what the Pooka was.
Paula Fuka. Yeah.
Paula Fuka, yes.
Yeah. By the way, I'm wondering now, is pardon me, is Paula Fuka named after that? Or is that just coincidental?
I don't know. But it was
ChatGPT.
ChatGPT will tell you the answer to that, by the way. Yeah.
So, what is the question again, Mike?
Pool of Hookah, which is the facility where the water is.
The electricity
and filtered. Yeah. Up in in Wicklow Mountains, in the lakes. And Pool of Hookah, which is Irish, P-O-L-L, and it's A, and then P-H-U-C-A, which translates, by the way, to the lair of the Pooka. The Pooka obviously is this mysterious monster.
Paula Fuka.
Yeah. Is it the same? Is that where it comes from?
Like the banshee.
Yeah. GBT just had a seizure here and was like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, I can't get the answer from that. I have no idea what you're talking about, by the way. No one has never heard of the Pooka in my life.
Tell him about the Pooka. Tell him about the Pooka.
You'd need to go to Clare to know about the Pooka.
Well, isn't it good coming on? Afterwards, he's going to tell us all about the Pooka, isn't he?
Well, it was the head of a horse, dark eyes, and eerie. You didn't want to meet the pook anyway, let's put it that way.
It was like, Steve, when your mother would tell you about the banshee.
Mm-hmm.
It's folklore.
What was the deal with that? If you heard screaming or crying, and then if the banshee threw the comb at you, you'd die or something stupid like that. Why was she throwing a bleeding comb at people?
it was trying to get us to go to bed early in the evening time.
Yeah.
The pook would get you if you didn't go to bed.
You know where the story of the banshee came from, don't you? So the banshee, and people would hear the wailing of the banshee at night, right?
That's right.
Okay, so it sounded like a baby screaming or crying or something like that.
A squeaky door.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It turns out that sound is actually the sound of foxes. So foxes make those sounds. And people mistakenly put that into some mysterious character or, you know, called the banshee at night. So that's where it kind of came from. Now, I don't know where the comb came from.
Am I wrong in bringing that up,
or is that just something that I imagined?
No. People mentioned that she had one eye and she had a comb and long hair.
Yeah, see, in fairness, my parents didn't need to use folklore to get me to bed. They would just kick the shit out of me and say, get to bed.
So, Annette, go back to the puka again. Sorry, go back to the puka. Yeah. Yeah, so you've been to see the puka loads of times.
I've been there several times. I brought a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Because I originally came from County Clare and I spent a lot of time down there.
Yeah, so I think the people of Ennis Simon made a bit of a mistake not having a place in Ennis Simon in the first place.
I think so too. I think that it's better where it is now, and the Michael Cusick Centre is actually beautiful. Mm. For anyone interested in GA or anything in that line, it's well worth even going in there for a nature walk in it and to see the beautiful walk that they have done through it. And then you have the Interpretive Centre in Kilfenora, which is another fabulous place all about the burden. So they're all very close.
Somebody that texted and said, who's Michael Cusick? Have you never been to Crow Park? For God's sake. The Cusick stand, for God's sake. Listen, yeah. And that's Steve.
Before you go, Annette, go ahead. Before you go, there's one person you should get on some night, and I guarantee you nobody'll sleep.
Who?
That's Edmund Lenehan.
Edmund, Connor's going to write that down. Edmund Lenehan, he's a storyteller, is he?
He's a storyteller, and he'd have you quaking in your boots, as they say.
Right, well, we shall do, Annette, thank you for the tip. We shall do that. We are always interesting people late at night. Steve, Annette, Margaret, thank you very much indeed. I've got to take a quick break. But before the break there, we talked about the puka. And of course, for those who don't know, there was a bit of controversy around the statue of the puka. Local authority, they unveiled that magnificent statue in North County Clare, inspired by the Irish folklore figure on Puka and the area's equine heritage. But originally the statue was meant to be put in Ennis Simon in County Clare, but after some locals objected to the 2-metre-tall bronze art piece due to its appearance, with a priest denouncing it during Sunday Mass. The statue, after it was unveiled at the new location, it's now been moved. Well, it never happened. It went to County Clare they moved the location of the puka. And now, by the way, the people are really, really happy. And it seems to draw in a huge crowd. Now, don't get me wrong. It's meant to be a mythological creature. But I suppose maybe the religious orders thought it was some sort of devil incarnate or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, we will be talking to the sculptor involved, Aidan Hart, straight after the break. And finding out all about that, and lots more too, by the way.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Got an opinion?
Hello?
Then get on the phone. 0818 942 105.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
You're listening to the best of Nighttime Talk. Please don't text or call, as you will be charged.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Welcome back. It's that time of the night again. We've got an unusual guest. I've got to just play this to give you a clue.
And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the
join in there, Connor. Now, if you listen very carefully, there's somebody whistling in that, by the way, in the background, but you can't really hear it. But I'm excited to welcome a true musical legend, John Altman. While you may not immediately recognize his name, you've definitely heard his work, from arranging for superstars like Rod Stewart, George Michael, Bjork, and to composing iconic moments in films like Titanic, GoldenEye, and of course, Monty Python. Always look on the bright side of life. John's career has spanned decades and genres. A gifted musician, composer, conductor, and arranger, John has now written a memoir titled The Hidden Man. I'll tell you where he got that name in a few minutes. My Many Musical Lives, offering us a kind of glimpse into his remarkable journey through life. And he joins me. John, good evening to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. And your whistle is in there somewhere, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's my arrangement. I'm conducting and I join in the whistling, and I swear I can hear myself.
You identify your own whistle. By the way, in relation to, you know, how you got, there's a kind of connection between the, you know, the Hidden Man, that name, I suppose, that you have, you know, that memoir, and Monty Python, because that was a name kind of gifted to you by Terry Gilliam, of course, from Monty Python.
That's right. He drew me as the Hidden Man because he said, I'm always around and nobody knows who I am.
You're kind of floating in the background somewhere.
Floating in the background, which is the way I've gone through life, I think.
I mean, Monty Python, I mean, I suppose we'll come to all the other stuff in a second, but Monty Python, they were legends in British comedy. You know, they were way ahead of their time. They spanned years. Was it just that particular, The Life of Brian, that you worked on, or was there other stuff that you worked on too?
No, I started with them, actually. It's now 51 years ago. I mean, I can't believe anything is 51 years ago, but in the days before VHS tapes, they made records.
That's right.
That was the only way you could hear their sketches, you know, but if you missed the TV show, you bought the record. So the record sold really well.
Yeah,
and they made an album called Matching Tie and Handkerchief.
I remember it well. I had it.
And I went along to play saxophone on it, and they didn't need saxophone, so I wound up singing and clapping on a track. And I never heard it till a couple of years ago. Someone sent me a copy, and again, I could hear myself above everyone else, which is...
Yeah, I remember another one of their albums I had was called the Contractual Obligation album. I don't know if you remember that.
That's right.
Yeah, yes. And which had to be, because here's a little bit of a background story. I worked in a record shop. I was manager of a record shop at the time, back in 1981, that would have been, I think, in and around that time. And they brought the album out. We got about 20 copies of it in the record shop. And then EMI contacted us, or Polydor, I can't remember, and said, listen, you need to give them back to us. And I said, why, what's wrong? He said, we're repressing it. We have to take one of the tracks off for legal reasons. And I said, why, what happened? He said, John Denver sued them. So there was a track on it called This Is the Sound of John Denver Being Strangled. Do you remember that?
Oh, my goodness. No. And that's funny.
It's probably on YouTube if people search for it. Monty Python, The Sound of John Denver Being Strangled. So it's John Denver singing and then being strangled, I think, by Eric Idle.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's hilariously funny. But Denver sued them, so they had to repress the album again without that particular. And I believe they were also sued by the Finland Tourist Board because they had this boring song called Finland, The Place I Most Want to Be.
Now, that I do remember. Yes, that does ring a bell.
So where did you start? I mean, when we think of, you know, the idea of, you know, musician, composer, conductor, arranger, I automatically, and everybody thinks of the guy with the two sticks in his hand, you know, kind of conducting everything. So where did that all start for you?
Well, I was very lucky. My mother's four brothers were band leaders, and two of them were extremely well known. My eldest uncle was Sid Phillips, who was Britain's top jazz clarinet player and arranger. And my youngest uncle was Wolf Phillips, who, when I was born, was conductor at London Palladium.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically was conducting for Sinatra, Nat King Cole,
wow,
Marx Brothers, Judy Garland, Dean Martin, Danny Kaye, the Andrews Sisters. And these are people I grew up with, not having a clue who they were.
Wow.
But they would come visit us, you know, and Jack Benny would be sitting on the sofa, and I didn't know who he was, you know. He used to put black boot polish on his ball patch and it would come off on the antimacassars and my mum would go crazy, you know, because he couldn't watch it out.
Wow. I mean, they're all dead now, every single one of them, but they were legends of music in their day. Oh, legends.
Totally, totally. I mean, he conducted for Duke Ellington, for Benny Goodman, you know, so before I really knew what was what, I was listening to records and picking up what was going on the records.
Mm-hmm.
And I started piano lessons at 7, and I also started composing at 7, which is quite extraordinary, I guess.
Yeah, you know, although of course it's extraordinary.
It was natural, you know, yeah. Something I did. And bizarrely, years later, I did a commercial for Back to School for one of the big stationery chains, and they said, could you write something that sounds like it was written by a 7-year-old? And I went, yes, I can. And there it was. I used it on a commercial, which is amazing, remembering it 50-odd yeah. years later.
I mean, you also worked, you know, with incredible artists yourself, like Rod Stewart, Bjork. I don't know now which Bjork one it was. I wonder, was it this one? Hang on.
And so peaceful and tear.
Is it that one?
You ring the it is indeed.
Because I know it had to be that one, because the composition in that and the arrangement in that is massive for what essentially is a pop song. You know what I mean? So it was, and I remember the video for it as well, of course. It was a great video too, and Bjork was a great artist. Video. Yeah. So what was your role in that? And how, I mean, it must be mind-blowing for you artists like Rod Stewart, George Michael, or indeed Bjork, who was massively big at the time, to, you know, get a phone call one day and say, listen, we're doing a new song and we want you to do a composition, you know, for this. It's not just a guitar and a drum situation. We want a whole orchestra here.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what happened. I mean, I got a phone call from her management saying she wants to do this big band track. And I have my own big band. I mean, my own big band basically consists of all the great session players. You know, I don't carry them around with me. I just put them together. But I got the track, and I thought it existed. It was the Betty Hutton song in the 50s. But it was quite dated. And I sort of modernized it, made it sound a bit up to date, got my big band in, wrote the arrangement. We were doing it live, and recording sessions are usually 10 in the morning till lunchtime. And on this particular morning, when we had to do it all at once, she arrived 15 minutes before the end of the session.
Wow. Right.
And she said, you know, what are we doing? And I said, well, what we're doing is losing everyone in 15 minutes. And she said, we better go ahead then, hadn't we? And 4 minutes later, we finished the record.
So she did it in one take?
One take, all live, her singing and the band playing. And what people don't know, and I tell people, it's the first time I met her, because she just sent me a cassette of the song. So when she came in, I didn't know whether she could perform the song. I didn't know, you know, I thought, oh, we're going into overtime. We can't go into overtime because we lose the musicians.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what was going to happen. And what happened was one take and
wow,
the record finished. Amazing.
You wouldn't get an artist doing that nowadays, let me tell you.
No, I mean,
400 million takes and 20 edits. You know what I mean?
It was even rare in those days, you know. I mean, you were used to doing take after take to get it right, you know. But if you listen to the record, it sounds like a first take. It sounds like everybody is live and, you know, on the edge. And that's what I love about it.
And it's a wonderful composition. I love that slow start. Do, 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 do.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of, that when that piece comes in, that big band sound, it just sounds wonderful. I actually do like Bjork, by the way. I used to love that sort of song, Good, what was it, Big Time Sensuality, and a few other tracks she had at the time. But that was so different for her to do a song like that.
Very different. Very different. And, I think it's a shame she never did anything else like it. You know,
no.
Just a one-off.
Yeah, I mean,
but you know, you can't. You know, that's her choice, so you go with it.
I mean, the other artists you've worked with were George Michael. What did you do with George Michael, by the way?
I did "Kissing a Fool" on Faith,
okay.
Which I arranged, and I'm actually playing sax on it. I very rarely play on records that I've arranged, but I did on that one.
Okay. Rod Stewart, what did you do with him?
I arranged a Tom Waits song called Downtown Train.
Yeah.
Which was a huge hit for him. And
I remember it well, yeah.
Yeah, the bizarre story about that as well, because we recorded it in the key of G, and when he came in to sing it, he found it was too low for his voice. So he had the track pushed up to B flat, which is quite a way away from the key of G. Mm-hmm. And in those days, there was no computer software to, you know, take the pitch up without changing all the vibratos or the speed. But somehow Trevor Horn, who produced it, managed to push it up. And the ironic thing is, if I'd have known it was going to be in B flat, I wouldn't have written the arrangement that I wrote. But it had this ethereal otherworld quality, and that made it a big hit. And it's really strange, you know. I mean, these things happen, and they're out of your control, but they suddenly, they're huge.
I mean, you mentioned Trevor Horn's name, of course, another great producer. People would know more so from Buggles' video of Kill the Radio Star, and also, obviously, the man behind Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the first manufactured band, probably the first boy band.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And I did, with Trevor, I did Simple Minds, Street Fighting Years, and I did Tina Turner's and Barry White, Never in Your Wildest Dreams.
See, I boast all the time on the air that I've seen the original Pink Floyd, you know, the whole band live. I've seen Queen live 5 times, you know.
Well,
and I feel, you know, I'm privileged to talk to you because not only have you seen everything I've seen, and you've also seen with Fleetwood Mac as well, but like artists like Led Zeppelin, Jeff Beck, Jimi Hendrix Experience, Cream, with Eric Clapton, I assume. And you've worked with all of these or seen all of these and been with all of these. You sound so young, John.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, now, and I think, particularly when I was, like, just turned 20, I was playing with Peter Green when he left Fleetwood Mac. I was playing with Nick Drake and John Martin. I was playing with Muddy Waters. I was playing with Kevin Ayers. How did all this happen? I'm a 20-year-old university student.
John Martin was one of the first gigs I went to see. I went to see John Martin in the National Stadium in Ireland. I remember I was a big fan. I had the album at the time. What was it? One of my favorite songs was that sweet little mystery that makes you mine. Remember that song? Great, great song.
Oh, yes.
Is he still, by the way, is John Martin still on the go? Is he still playing? Or
No, he passed away a few years ago.
Oh, no.
Which is a shame. But then obviously I got with Van Morrison in the mid-70s after I left Hot Chocolate.
I mean, your list is endless, John.
I know.
How do you get all this into one book?
I did. I mean, it sounds awful, you know, and I'm embarrassed, but not embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed because it's my life, and I can't change it, you know. So if I say I went from Hot Chocolate to Van Morrison, that's what I did, you know. And at the same time, I was writing for the BBC, and then I got into movie scoring. So I had and commercials. So I had an incredibly diverse portfolio, because if I wasn't doing a commercial, I'd be doing something for Van and then Monty Python at the same time. I mean, we did Life of Brian and the Ruffles at the same time as I was on tour with Van, which is mind-boggling now.
Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, it's Niall Boylan. Weeknights from 9, I open the phone lines for your opinions. Honest, upfront, and unfiltered.
The stupidity of our so-called politicians, they don't have a clue how to run money.
And you broke the law.
But I never said that I didn't break the law. Niall, all know what I'm talking about.
The Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Monday to Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight. With Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now,
and you mentioned commercials as well. I mean, I'll just play this one. People will know this one. The ladies who enjoy their cars.
Sheila's wheels are superstars. Sheila's wheels.
Now, that was Sheila's Wheels, of course, which was an insurance company that people would have remembered the ad from TV that was primarily for women, well, just for women, which they got into a bit of trouble over, actually, because people were claiming it was discrimination. Why don't you insure men? But you did the composition for that.
I did. And it went from being a non-existent company to being the market leader. So the commercial obviously worked.
It did. I vaguely remember the commercial was like these two girls in a car, in an open top pink car. Yeah, that's right. Yep. I remember the advertisement at all. I mean, what was your, I mean, look, this is a stupid question after everything you've just told me, right? Well, what was your favorite moment? I mean, if I said to you to pick a moment in your career that you kind of went, I've made it. Was there a moment? I mean, there's been loads of those moments, I assume. But if there's one that you could pick out and say, you know, you're standing there and you went, am I really doing this? I've made it.
Oh, I mean, there are a lot. And there are things that you do that you look back on and you think, wow, you know, that was amazing. I mean, a silly thing like Michael Jackson sending me his regards, you know, after I'd done something for him. Or playing with Prince, which was like the apex, you know, because he's probably the greatest performer that I ever saw. And mm-hmm. I'm standing on stage with him. It's insane, really.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, the highlight for me has really been doing, sort of making records and movies that people still remember. And I'm always amazed at that because, you know, I could say, well, I did a dance record in 1991 by X and Y, and that people would go, well, I've never heard of them. But the people I work with are Diana Ross and Tom Jones and Tina Turner, and they're all still there. Everybody knows them. And similarly, Python. I've done two James Bond films.
Which were the James Bonds? You did MEC, GoldenEye. And what was
I wrote The Tank Chase for GoldenEye, and I arranged a lot of the last Bond film, No Time to Die, for Hans Zimmer. And conducted it. He rang me and asked me if I'd do it. So I did all the brass in the film.
And you also were involved in Titanic as well, one of the most iconic films of all time.
Well, Titanic, I did all the period music. So everything played by the orchestra on board the ship. So when it sinks, I arranged the, you know, Nearer My God to Thee that they play when the famous scene that everyone remembers.
Yeah.
It's my responsibility. So,
and what was that phone call like with James Cameron? I'm assuming he rang you at some point and said, listen, this is what we need.
Well, he rang me. It's a very funny story. I mean, I was back in England because we did all the pre-recording in Switzerland. The band was Swiss. And they were filming in Mexico. They offered me the part of the orchestra leader. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want 2 weeks in Mexico. I'm starting another film, Little Voice, which is a great film. And my friend did it. He was stuck there for 2 years. So I made the right choice, I think.
Yeah, it was an epic.
I went to bed one night, woke up next morning about 8:30, and there were 10 messages on my answer machine. And they were increasingly frantic, and the last one was James Cameron saying, ring me now. So I rang and I said, hello James, it's John Altman in London. He said, Nearer My God to Thee, how's it go? And I said, I started singing it. He went, do it again, and put a megaphone to the phone. And what happened was he decided to film it live, and the band said, we don't know it. So they obviously waited the whole night for me to wake up. Why they couldn't find someone in America who could tell them how it went. I had to sing it over the phone, and the violinist wrote it down. And that's how they do it on the film. That's from my dreadful singing at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, I was only talking about this last night. We were chatting to somebody, and we were talking to an artist last night. And we went about how important music is in movies and dramas and TV shows. I think they're starting to get the hang of it again. There was a period where it kind of became unimportant for some stupid reason, but they're starting to get the hang of it again. And I was talking about the new Venom movie, which is, I love the Marvel movies, by the way. And on the trailer, they have a slowed down version of David Bowie, Life on Mars. And it's, yeah, it's like, you know, ground control to major. And they've used the original vocals and some of the original arrangement, but they've slowed it right down. And it's you should watch it. It's incredible. The difference it can make to a trailer, the difference it can make to a movie. Bad music in a movie can destroy it.
Oh, totally. And equally, if it's well done, it becomes another character in the film. And the old adage was, I mean, which I don't quite believe, people would say, oh, if you don't notice the music, it's doing its job. I don't quite agree with that, but I know what people mean by saying that, which is that, you know, you can have a score that is too intrusive, or you can have a score that is totally inappropriate, you know. But when you hit the nail on the head, there's nothing better, and you do remember great film scores. You know, they stick in your mind forever.
Is there any, I mean, as a radio presenter, I often sit and I hear other radio presenters and I go, I wouldn't have said that to him. So I'm assuming as a composer, you sit and listen to movies or songs and you go, wouldn't have done it that way in that key. Is there any major musical arrangement or song that you would have done differently, that, you know, maybe even a classic that you think to yourself, I would have done that differently? I mean, has there been the other ones? Because it was a listener just texted that question in, by the way, so I said I'd ask it. Is there anything that you...
Really?
Yeah.
No. Well, I think it's more a case of I always listen to records to hear what the arrangement is and what they've done. And they can be so clever because they actually make the song. And I always, if I do a talk, I always say to people, how does Tears of a Clown go? And they'll go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I stop them and say, that isn't the song. That is the arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
How does Sweet Caroline go? Ba-ba-ba. Mm-hmm. No, that's the arrangement.
Yeah.
That's Charlie Colello. How does... That's not the song.
Yeah, I it's love you, text. Baby. Yeah, yeah.
It is not part of the song. Charlie Colello wrote that as a part of the arrangement. Mm-hmm. So, and you could go on, you know, Careless Whisper.
I mean, they're iconic. These are iconic compositions within songs. Like Careless Whispers, for example, you just mentioned. And as a nightclub DJ in my career, we used to have the slow sets. And you'd play Careless Whisper. We usually do the first song of the slow set. But as soon as they heard that sax, that you knew it was Careless Whisper. The same with Baker Street. You knew the start of Baker Street.
Steve Gregory for Careless Whisper and Raff Ravenscroft on Baker Street got session fees. You know, they didn't get any royalties. They didn't get any kudos almost because you had to find out who these people were. Mm. If you're in the know and in the business, you would find out who they were, but the general public wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
And so I, rather than say, you know, oh, I wouldn't have done that or I wouldn't have done this, I always listen to arrangements and go, ah, I see what they've done there. I see how they've done that. That's a great thing, you know, and it can be a really simple thing like the oboe on I've Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher. Just playing those simple ba 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 makes the record, you know.
And by the way, does it worry you? Because unfortunately now I'm running out of time and I'm really enjoying this conversation and I would have loved to have spoken to you for another half an hour. But does it worry you now? We're in a different time. AI, of course, is taking over everything. I've seen people literally type into AI, write me a song and compose a song, you know, a Western version of, I don't know, I Love You Baby or whatever it is. I mean, an AI will just do it for you. Does that worry you for the future?
Well, what worries, it worries me, the main problem I have with all of that is none of it really has any heart. And you can feel that it doesn't have any heart. It's clever, but it's completely, for me, music is a lot about emotion and emotional response. And the response you get to an AI track is intellectual. It's not emotional because it's actually churning out words and music without any real meaning.
It's like when we change from having a drummer to a drum machine.
Exactly. That's a very good analogy.
Or when we moved away from an orchestra and started using Casio keyboards with samplers on it instead.
Yep.
It just didn't. Because I played recently, I did a gig. I came out of retirement to do a DJ gig and I was playing oldies. And I played Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder. Yes. And I said, the manager of the club was standing beside me, and I said, and they have an amazing sound system. It's cost about €170,000, right? Wonderful sound system. And I said to him, listen to that brass section. You cannot do that on a keyboard. It just doesn't sound the same.
Not at
all. You know?
It's absolutely right. And, I mean, arrangers suffered, obviously, because people were buying kits that sampled things. And, you know, I mean, the worst thing for me is when you hear a rap record and they've sampled Move On Up or something like that, a classic arrangement. And it's completely inappropriate for what it's been put into. And it's, you know, it's a sort of sacrilege to me.
Yeah, it takes the heart out of it. It does, you're right.
Yeah.
I agree with you because I've heard some great songs. I'm a big Queen fan, I'm a big Pink Floyd fan. And I've heard some samples taken from both Pink Floyd and Queen and put into other songs. And it just destroys them.
It destroys them, yeah. And funnily enough, I was with Brian May a couple of days ago. So,
oh, stop. Just the way you just nothing. The way you just dropped that in, I was chatting to Brian the other day, you know. I did actually meet Freddie Mercury and Roger Taylor when I was 16 years of age in Dublin in the Gresham Hotel.
Oh, the Gresham. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, because that was the hotel of choice for the celebrities when I was 16 years of age.
Oh, I stayed there with Van. Yeah.
Well, myself and a friend of mine at 16, we had gone to see Queen in the RDS Simmons Court. They were on two nights, Thursday and Friday, back in 1979. And we'd gone to see them on the first night. We had found out they were in the Gresham. We snuck in the back door, crawled in on our hands and knees, got into the lift, up to the penthouse, top floor, knocked on the door, and Freddie Mercury opened it. I couldn't have been more delighted. And he brought us into the room, gave us two tickets, two programs. They both signed them and gave us two tickets for the gig that night. We were never so happy in all our lives. It was the most amazing moment in my life. A lovely man, by the way, a great guy.
Oh, yeah. We toured, going back to when I was in Hot Chocolate, we had the same agent. So they were basically a day behind us on tour.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent quite a bit of time, you know, bumping into each other at motorway service stations or staying in the same hotel and going to each other's gigs. So this would be 76.
Yep, yep.
And wonderful. You know, I got very friendly with Freddie, actually, at that time. We our paths sort of diverged because I came off the road in 79 and was basically in the studios through the 80s till I started playing again in public, really, in the 90s. But all through the 80s, I was too busy doing movies and TV and drama and, you know, commercials and records, which is great.
By the way, it's
different.
Don't ever tell Brian May, if you're talking to him again, that I will. Even though I'm the biggest Queen fan in the world, I refuse to go and see John Taylor, Roger Taylor, Brian May, and anybody else, including Adam Lambert, singing, because I believe that it should have never been carried on after Freddie died.
It's interesting, isn't it? I know we were talking the other day.
He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the money.
No, we were talking the other day, and I forget who was saying that. They went to see Queen with Paul Rodgers and went, no, it just doesn't work. But then they were invited to see it with Adam Lambert and they said it was really good. It was different, but it was good.
Queen is Freddie Mercury. It's like going to see Wham without George Michael or, you know, Spiders without David Bowie or the Rolling Stones without Mick Jagger, AC/DC without Angus Young.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Ireland's classic hits. That I haven't already heard. I'm just trying to find a decent melody, a song. jumping for me. It was a fall, it's a long way down to nothing at all. You've got to get yourself together. You've got stuck in the moment and you can't get out of it. Don't say that later will be better. Now you're stuck in the moment and you can't get out of it. And if the night runs over, and if the day won't last, and if the wish falls along and the storm.
Classic Hits Radio.
I'm in the car for nearly 2.5 hours a day, so it's on the radio. I work from home one day a week, so I'd have it on Alexa.
Just great songs, great artists, and great music.
Fantastic, friendly.
The home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
But a slow glowing dream that your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind. All alone I have cried, silent tears full of pride in a world. Close my eyes.
The home of the 80s and 90s across Ireland.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, recommend getting your heart trampled on to anyone. Yeah. Hi, recommend walking around naked in your living room. Yeah. Swallow it down. Check it out. It feels so good. Swing it in your stomach. Wait until the dust settles. You live, you learn, you love, you burn, you cry. You live, you lose, you learn, you bleed, you learn, you scream, you learn.
And 90s in Phibsborough.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
me in the middle. So I twist and turn. But here am I in my little bubble, singing out, I never meant to cause you trouble. I never meant to do you wrong. What if I ever caused you trouble? And oh, no, I never meant to do you harm.
Another hour on the home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's classic hits.
Sat on the fence, but it don't work.